Danny Schaefer.
That's me filling in for Michael Smirkanish. I'll be on again tomorrow, and then that's it. Michael will be back after the first of the year. Again, I'm Danny Schaefer. Appreciate you tuning in. My next guest is the author of the Blind Vision series of books, and he's the founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. The website is theimperfectmessenger.com. Curtis Greco. Curtis, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Denny. Great to be with you again.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and yours. Did you have a blessed holiday?
Yes, it's extraordinary. It's a great time of year. Lots to be thankful for.
Are you on the left coast? You are, aren't you?
Yeah, forgive me.
Are you guys getting nailed with some rain? Are you dealing with that?
Yes, we're doing okay. You know, there's I'm out in the backyard. I came in. I'm out there building an ark.
Yes, you should be.
Just call me Noah.
Well, I just had Brian Sussman out. Are you familiar with Brian?
Yes, what an extraordinary guy he is.
Isn't he great? TheClimateGateBook.com. He's a lot of fun to listen to. I mean, he's passionate, and I don't necessarily agree with everything he says, but he's really worried about California and how it's just going to all come crumbling down very soon.
Well, California, as we've talked before, is a metaphor for what's happening across the country. It is the extreme version of politics out of control. It is the classic example of the government process that articulates a response to a problem it creates. And it draws people into a perverse and twisted belief system that actually forces and more importantly, encourages people to create a sense of government dependence. And we've got to find a way to get away from it.
Well, you do realize that California is too big to fail, and the federal government's going to bail them out just like they do everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the Federal Reserve is playing in the markets as we speak pick up debt for the state of California, ironically and strangely enough, and burden the other 49 states with California's failure.
Well, I tell you what, all heck's going to break loose when they write that big check to California, but I don't want to talk to you about that just yet. You are the author of the Blind Vision series, We Hold These Truths, Value Given, Value Received, and Valor in Prosperity. Why did you write the series?
I think for much of the same reasons that you are passionate and deliver such a stroke of pure concern, I share that same position. I look back at the history, my own personal history, coming up through the public accounting profession, working through the federal government processes years ago during the RTC, the savings and loan failures, and being out there in the public domain, speaking on various subjects and observing the failure across the country, the homelessness, the wholesale exportation of the economic engine of this country. And I've observed the political process, and I just came to the conclusion that somebody has got to try to address some of these specific issues where we've gone off the rails, so to speak, and have literally, to the untrained eye or to the observer, appears that we deliberately have destabilized the economic and historical vibrance of this country. And I was listening to the press, listening to the media, and I just wasn't seeing anybody looking at the kinetic or causal forces. And I, you know, had the opportunity, was encouraged after a speaking commitment that I talked on many of the subjects that appear in the book, and a person said to me, Curtis, you need to get this out. And so it's a self-funded project because of my passion and my love for the historical significance of this country. And so we sat down and, basically wrote the books.
But, Curtis, why three books? Why not just one really big one?
Well, I felt that the topics, because I wanted to keep it, I didn't want it to be an academic exercise. I wanted it to be something that the public could look at and take not a numerical or a clinical approach to understanding what's going on, but to take put it into a philosophical context. And I was concerned that if I created a 400-page book, that perhaps people would be intimidated by it. And so I deliberately wrote them in a format and was actually encouraged to do it to split it up and create a topical trend. And that's why the titles are the way they are. we hold these truths. You know, it's, what do we hold to be the significant reasons why this country exists? And do we believe it? You know, value given, value received. What happened in the economic process that violated the fundamental economic cycles that gave life to this country? And three, to close with the final book, Valor and Prosperity, really talks about, condenses books one and two briefly at the beginning, and then goes into a discussion about why and what we can do to reverse the trend and reclaim the historical significance, not only for the current the time we presently live in, but for future generations. I believe it's important that we understand that the things we do today dramatically affect what happens in the future. And I think this country has lost the connection between the cause and effect process. And I think we're suffering, well, in fact, I think it's fair to say we can all agree that the world we find ourselves in today is a direct reflection of not only bad and poor government, but also the disconnect that government has between the real world that people like you and me and your listeners live in.
My guest is Curtis Greco, the author of the Blind Vision series. The website is theimperfectmessenger.com. Of course, I'm Denny Schaefer, filling in for Michael Smirkanish. Curtis, I want to ask you this. Give me your thoughts on the successes and failures of government in 2010.
Well, you know, the only thing I can see that really was a successful play in government from 2010 was the response to poor government at the midterm elections. I do, however, believe that what the great risk looking forward is that what the 2010 elections only did was actually further illustrate to the public the detachment of government to the will of the people. I really don't see any successes legislatively from 2010. I think that there is a colossal accumulation of dramatic failures, whether it's Obamacare, the Wall Street Reform Act, the last rush to stupid of the last weeks of the 111th Congress, whether it be the Don't Ask, Don't Tell bill.
Well, hold on. Let me interrupt you right there, Curtis. Do you think that we benefit as a country if we don't acknowledge that, you know, the government and or, you know, depending on what side of the political spectrum you fall on, do you feel that, you know, not at least acknowledging there had to be something that government did right? Does that further us as a nation, or everything the government did in 2010 was wrong and then everything in 2011? You know what I mean? I mean, The tax compromise got passed. That wasn't a good thing.
I think that the idea of a tax correction or addressing the issue of the Internal Revenue Code, I think, is an incredible opportunity for government to address. I think Obama could be revitalized and completely recharacterize his presidency with two strategic moves, which they failed to do. I look at government as the article of opportunity when properly practiced, as it, by the way, was intended. So I don't want to, you know, jump on the bandwagon of many others who, you know, want to pass vitriolic speech on, you know, government this and damn government that and all that. I just look at the reality of it. I look across the country. I see we're pushing 20 million unemployed. I look at the death of the economic cycle in the country. And you know, you can only look at the processes of government and point fingers at it. You look at the healthcare system. You see. Interestingly enough, I just got a bill, a notice of premium increases. In the last year, my health insurance has doubled. I haven't gotten any more benefits out of it. But
stop smoking and drinking all that beer.
Yeah, or all the wine, right? So I'm a diehard positive person. I mean, I don't look for reasons to fail. I look for reasons to succeed. I look for methods and mediums that we can go after to create the rising tide for the entire country. So I tend to not look at government from the standpoint of, you know, take the libertarian approach or, you know, various philosophical approaches that we don't need government. Not at all. I think there's a terrific place for government to be the paving mechanism for allowing an environment where people can drive their individual and sovereign vehicles to great expressions of their fullest potential. I just don't think we're doing it.
All right, let me ask you this, Curtis, because you mentioned 20 million folks out of work, unemployment's high, the economy is going slow. So imagine my surprise when I open up my local newspaper, and yes, I'm one of the last of the great frontier who actually still gets his newspaper delivered to his home. I'm reading the business section today, and I see this story. Holiday sales approach record. When they count up all the receipts for the 2010 holiday shopping, they think it's going to be the biggest season, the biggest spending ever. Now, how can that be when so many people are out of work and hurting and nobody has jobs? I mean, I don't get this. Either it's true or it's not, or somebody's lying.
Well, you know, it's also based on a false premise, all right? It's the belief that there's an equation that somehow equals, or one can extrapolate that the reason why people are spending money is because they have wealth. Number one. Number two, it also makes the assumption that there's a direct correlation to the economic health of the country and people's spending habits during the Christmas season. Whatever the truth of those numbers, and we all know that the numbers through the various government agencies that create these statistics can make you think, this is an exception or a comment parallel to something I said earlier, that it makes people believe a false premise and the government is somehow having this great effect on the outcome. But let's understand that whatever the truth of that statement, whatever the relevance of it, whether it be that the numbers are accurate or the numbers are false, one of the things that we need to recall is that whenever in an economic cycle, particularly in a country the size of the United States, remember this is 300 plus million people with a GDP alleged to be $14.7 trillion, where the only component of the U.S. economy that's creating true wealth is a $3 trillion component. So you got $3 trillion in manufacturing and agriculture and mine output supporting a nearly $15 trillion GDP.
Okay, my head's spinning. Dude, you got to talk in English here. Let me just ask you this. With these holiday sales approaching a record, does it really benefit this country or does it benefit China because that's where it all comes from?
Well, that's where I'm ultimately getting with the $3 trillion reference, is that whatever the number is, it really matters not, because why? None of the money's staying here in the United States. Very little of the economic cycle.
How much of this money was paid, or how many of these gifts and products were purchased with good old-fashioned cash as opposed to plastic?
Well, and again, you know, I don't have those statistics at hand to spread it, but let's say that you know, it's a 50-50 split. Let's just say that 50% was in cash and 50% was in credit assumption. Let's look at the greater picture. Let's consider that 93% of the consumer products sold in the United States are sourced from outside the United States. So your iPods, your iPads, your stereos, your clothing, your, you know, whatever it is that you drove home in the trunk of your car and stuffed underneath your Christmas tree or whatever, 93% of those products are sourced from outside the United States.
That's the tragedy of it all.
That's the underlying problem. And when we go into...
What's in our government, Curtis, because you're a smart guy, and I want to believe our government is smart. Why are they not rewarding companies that manufacture stuff here and encourage companies to stop being greedy weasels and moving their manufacturing to China and third world countries? Why aren't we rewarding these people for making their products here and creating jobs?
Well, because government actually did the reverse. That is, the government actually rewarded companies for doing exactly what they did, and that is pushing jobs offshore, that is pushing manufacturing capability offshore, because of the belief system that was sold to the political organism that we call government that somehow was in the United States' best interest to, in effect, export its economic engine. You know, there's motivations, and we can get into the reasons why, you know, my perspective as to why they did that. But at this point,
somebody's paid off. That's there you go, right there.
Well, you know,
somebody's getting paid.
Well, absolutely. It's always the same old story. Follow the money.
All right, Curtis, I hate to interrupt you here. I'm up against a break. We'll do another segment. It's Curtis Greco. The website is theimperfectmessenger.com. I'm Denny Schaefer, and this is the Michael Schmerkanish Program.
Danny Schaefer.
That's me filling in for Michael Smirkanish. Appreciate you tuning in. My guest is Curtis Greco, author of the Blind Vision series of books. You'll find more out about him and his writings, theimperfectmessenger.com. Curtis, welcome back.
Thanks, Danny.
All right, I want to ask you this in our last few minutes of the interview. Give me your thoughts on the 112th Congress. I mean, it ended. I mean, it wasn't your typical lame duck. It wasn't lame at all. President Obama changed the momentum. What's going to happen after the 112th is signed in or whatever, sworn in?
Well, you know, the Republicans are going to be in a strategic position to try to steer the country into a positive direction. And if Obama is intelligent enough and he can overcome his nihilistic and self-obsessed tendencies, he can do some dramatic things. And I think that if it's okay with you, let's run through some of what I refer to as the strategic developments and hit them real quick.
We've only got a couple of minutes, but go ahead.
Let's rock through them. Number one, I think that the U.S., we need to look at doing something deliberately and strategically regarding existing mortgages. If we don't do something with a strategic plan to reset and revalue existing mortgages and residential housing, then the residential component of the U.S. economy, along with the commercial end of it, is going to completely implode and make what the last 2 years look like, what has happened in the last 2 years look like a Tupperware party. Number two, I think we need to definitely look at the tax code to redesign and redefine what tax revenue generation means and use it specifically to target job creation and investment domestically. I think we need to deliberately look at unions and the impact, this ability that unions have to enforce collective bargaining, not only on the private sector, but also on the in government.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Yeah, really. But it's you know, sooner or later, what's going to happen, and we're already seeing it across the country with the increasing number of cities, municipalities, and states that are at and about to declare or attempt to declare bankruptcy. It's going to have to be addressed one way or the other. I think we need to target and incentivize domestic enterprise. We need to redefine, number four, we need to redefine trade policy that becomes beneficial to the U.S. I think we need to look at legal reform and judicial review and malpractice and prosecutorial issues. And all targeted creating and, restructuring the overbite of government administration. And the next one is target sustainable energy development. One of the things that made the U.S. so economically viable historically was energy was readily accessible and it was affordable for industry. We're going to have to deal with that. We're going to have to target that device, that integral component of economic sustainability. I think we need to look at this healthcare thing is tragic.
I'll tell you what, and that's already starting to fall apart. Curtis, unfortunately, I'm out of time. It's Curtis Greco, author of the Blind Vision series. Find out more about Curtis. Get the books at theimperfectmessenger.com. And, Curtis, look forward to having you on in 2011.
Okay, pal. Thanks for the invite. Take good care, and all the best to you and your listeners.
Same to you. God bless. Bye-bye.